Hi, you're watching Stefan Levera Podcast, brought to you by Swan.com. Now, many of you are probably aware of Bitcoin Beach and El Salvador's Bitcoin law. So a lot of people think of that as the first Bitcoin circular economy. But are you aware that actually there was an earlier one from 2014, believe it or not? And so joining me today is Patrick van der Meijde. He is the founder of Bitcasa and also co-founder of the Arnhem Bitcoin City, which is in the Netherlands. And so we're talking about that today and his journey of how he got started, taking payments pre-Lightning, and some of the experiences around trying to grow a Bitcoin circular economy. So on to my chat with Patrick. Patrick, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
So Patrick, I know you are, you have a long history with Bitcoin. You've been involved as a founder of Bitcasa and also a co-founder of Arnhem Bitcoin City, which, as I understand, is the first Bitcoin circular economy. So let's get into some of this. Let's get into how you sort of when you first got into Bitcoin and how you got started with all this stuff.
Yeah, so in 2012, a friend of me and Rogier, which is one of the partners which I founded Arnhem Bitcoin City and Bitcasa with. And so a common friend of us just told us about Bitcoin and that maybe we should check it out. So that's actually how we, how the rabbit hole opened for us and how we dug in. And yeah, by 2014, we were really sure that Bitcoin was going to be much more important in the future than it was back then in 2014, and that we really should do something with it.
Yeah, so, on the 2014 question, I'm curious, I'd love to hear a bit of your insight or a bit of your recollection from that time, because narratives have changed over time, right? Like I came in early 2013, and I remember at that time there was way more talk about remittance. There was way more talk about merchant acceptance. There wasn't as much of the kind of understanding of, HODL your Bitcoin. Like that just, it was a different time at least. And I'm curious to hear how you thought.
Those sounds were also there. But yeah, I think the main thing was, okay, this is going to change the world, and especially in the third world countries where the financial infrastructure is not as good as in the Western countries. So yeah, I think that was about it. But yeah, even then in 2014, I gave presentations about Bitcoin to a general audience in Arnhem who were just interested in the topic. And one of the questions we got was, okay, so this Bitcoin money, what can I buy with it? And then we could only refer them to some online service where you could buy pizza and let them order it at your house. So yeah, we thought, how cool would it be if we could actually manage that you would be able to pay for your beer in a cafe in Arnhem or something else. And that's a bit how we started it.
Yeah, and so I think it's funny that a lot of people, when they first hear about this idea, they're oftentimes their first thought is, where can I spend it? Right? There's no sort of understanding, and I understand now sort of the way often we will teach Bitcoin now is more like, hey, you can use it as your savings, right? Now, I'm not opposed to spending. I'm not saying like only HODL, but I think now there's a better understanding of, okay, it's like collective, then a store of value, then these other stages that happen.
True, but also I think there is some misunderstanding, I think that's how I see it, about the value of HODLing Bitcoin. If everybody is only HODLing Bitcoin, and at one point people just want to get it, want to get out and get fiat money again, then we're all just looking at each other. Okay, who's going to be the first one to step out of this and then use fiat money again? While if you can just use your Bitcoin for everyday purchases and you have absolutely no need to get back into fiat money again, then that changes the whole game in my opinion. So for me, I'd say if you could not spend Bitcoin at any place, then that would really lower the value of its practical use, and therefore why should you HODL it if you one time you really have to sell it again for something else. So
I think the way I see it is more just like there will be, you know, obviously it's impossible for everyone to HODL. There will be some people who have to obviously to spend because, you know, you got to eat and live somewhere and pay your rent and all of this. But I think what would be really interesting as well is it's like in earlier days, fees were so low, or people didn't even really think about the fees, right, in those days. And yet this was all pre-Lightning, right? So I'm curious how that worked for you guys as well. Like, what was the thinking at that time? I mean, obviously, most few people, you know, the block size wars hadn't happened yet. So do you want to just give us your thoughts on how people were seeing that?
Yeah, I think I absolutely did a few Bitcoin transactions without paying any fee at all. You could just broadcast Bitcoin transactions without any fee and they would still be mined most of the time. So the thing, of course, was that a Bitcoin transaction will only get confirmed in probably like 10 minutes. So we were taking a risk for the merchants as Bitkassa. And we told them, so whenever you see the screen, the green Bitkassa screen, then the payment is done. And we make sure that you will get the fiat money back then, because every merchant in 2014 wanted to get just the fiat money from Bitkassa. So we automatically converted the Bitcoins into euros for them. So there was some risk of people double spending or service, and we were well aware of that. Actually, I think Peter Todd in 2014 was the first one to tell us in our face, "Okay, you're just doing this. You're getting wrecked.
You're taking
by this.
A risk, right?
Yeah, you're taking a risk." And we were like, "Yeah, sure. We are aware that we are taking a risk." However, we did manage to get some extra checks where we checked for a few seconds if there was another transaction on the network going on with a higher fee and some of that things. And we also checked if there were unconfirmed inputs from the transaction. So we had a little bit of more certainty, but still it was a risk.
Yeah. And I'm curious, did you ever get scammed? Did anybody try to double spend on you and scam you that way?
No, there was not on purpose, actually. However, in 2017 or 18, when the mempool was really filled up with transactions, one of my friends actually used, I don't remember which wallet he used, but he was actually just paying for a burger at a restaurant. And then like a few weeks later, the transaction had still not confirmed because he was giving it a low fee. And then at some time, the transaction disappeared from his wallet, and we checked at Bitkassa. Oh, there's now another transaction where he actually double spent it from his wallet without doing it on purpose. So that was like, I think, the only occasion where we had a double spend happening in the real world. But of course, we were not selling yachts or that sort of stuff. There was a jewelry, for instance, where you could pay for gold or jewelry with Bitcoins. But at that service, we made sure that there was one confirmation needed. So it was only small payments most of the time. And we said to ourselves, okay, let's just see how this happens. And if we find out that we do get double spent, then of course we need to close it down and see how to resolve it then. Which was obviously a problem because the Lightning Network was not around for that time. So it was just some fun experiment in our minds.
Yeah, interesting. And so let's bring it back to 2014. And I guess just to set the context as well, just for people who are overseas, they don't know Arnhem City. Tell us a little bit about Arnhem City and the context of where it is in the Netherlands.
So Arnhem is like a province capital in the Netherlands, in the east of the Netherlands. It has like 160,000 citizens. And you can now pay with Bitcoin, actually only Lightning, at over 60 merchants at the moment, I believe. A lot of restaurants, but also a florist or the Spar supermarket or a biological supermarket. So there's just a lot of places where you can actually pay with Bitcoin. And it just started with only some bars and restaurants, and that gained some attention. And then other merchants also reached out to us. For instance, a dentist who wanted to join the project and also started to accept Bitcoin in 2014. I believe he was one of the first also.
Great. And so as I recall, I saw news articles about in Germany as well. So there was, the infamous Bar 77.
Yeah.
And that was kind of one of the, I believe it was the first bar to take Bitcoin payment. And then I understand, you know, Arnhem City was one of the other ones, although I didn't actually know about you guys back then. But I'm curious what it was like in those early days in 2014. I guess it would have been mainly a vibe of curiosity, but it would occasionally be on the news. But also it would have been, because the Mt. Gox crash would have happened, I think, late 2013. And so 2014 would have been kind of like a bear cycle, right?
Yeah. We started in a bear cycle, yeah. Not the best way to start your project. But yeah, we started it in that. And I remember that people who came to our meetups, or monthly meetups, they were just wondering, well, will Bitcoin ever reach the €1,000 again? Or was it just one peak and then fade out? But we were still very convinced about the Bitcoin concept. So we continued with it, and turned out pretty well. But still, payments in Arnhem Bitcoin City is something that doesn't happen very often. There's like, for instance, a group in the Netherlands who are called the Node Runners. And many of those are often visiting Arnhem and just going on a buying streak at merchants that accept Bitcoin. But as for the locals, there's just a small group of people who are actually using Bitcoin. So it's still, most of the merchants that now accept Bitcoin are very used to it, and some of them don't even blink an eye if you want to pay with Bitcoin. But for some others, it's still something that only happens like once a year or once in a few months.
I guess one other interesting context point here is, correct me if I'm wrong, Netherlands does not have capital gains tax.
Yeah, that's absolutely true, yeah.
Right, and so that's another important factor, right?
Yeah. And even the complete legislation was very positive in the Netherlands, because the authority that might want to interfere with Bitcoin back then said, well, we don't consider Bitcoin as money. So for us, it's the same as if you were selling chairs or whatever. So they completely pulled off their hands of any Bitcoin thing. So we could just go ahead and do this, which obviously changed completely in 2020 with the European anti-money laundering rules.
Right. So I guess you would say in the 2014 days, it was like really light in terms of AML and from the capital gains tax perspective. So people, were more easily able to spend because they didn't have to worry about doing capital gains tax accounting, record keeping, all that stuff, right?
And that's still the case for the capital gains tax part. Right. So people who want to spend Bitcoin in the Netherlands don't have any administration whatsoever. The only thing that you have in the Netherlands is a wealth tax. Right. So at the 1st of January, you have to know how much your Bitcoin is actually worth at that date. And then you pay wealth tax over that amount. And it's like 2% or 1%, something in between there.
Damn, okay, yeah. So that kind of, that's a real bleed over time.
It's a real bleed, yeah. But much better than capital gain tax in most cases. Especially with the rise of Bitcoin in the past few years, of course.
Yeah, interesting how you think about that. And then, because I mean, capital gains tax, as you said, would be, in most countries, it might be 20, 30%, 40%, depending on that tax rate the people are paying every time they spend. So,
yeah.
I guess it's like that question of, would you rather pay, 2% on your total stack every year, or would you rather pay 25% or 30% only on what you spend, though? So that's kind of, it depends
on
how much you spend.
But the whole thing is being discussed at the moment, so things might change in the near future, but they still can't agree on what it should be then. So, but it's a topic of discussion in the parliament at the moment.
Okay, great. And so in those early days, as you said, there were some merchants who were taking Bitcoin, and most of them were just using fiat, right? Like, so they would just kind of take Bitcoin on the front side, and you would obviously, as Bitcaster, you would help flip it into fiat for them, and then they would take fiat.
That's how we started it,
I think
in 2014, maybe the end of 2014 or the beginning of 2015, we had like the first merchants who were telling us, well, I'd actually like to keep the Bitcoins myself. And so we had like a restaurant owner, for instance, who would keep the Bitcoins and actually use them to buy bread at a bakery that also accepted Bitcoin. So that was like the very start of a circular economy that we had here in Arnhem. On a very small scale, but still.
Back to the show in a moment. The lead sponsor of this show is Swan.com. And as you might know, I also work at Swan as head of education. Over at Swan.com or using the Swan Bitcoin app, you can buy Bitcoin. You can either do an ACH transfer of fiat in or wire in a larger amount of funds and either instantly purchase Bitcoin or set up an automated recurring purchase plan to just regularly stack sats. Now, Swan makes it easy for you to withdraw your Bitcoin. They are free withdrawals. So you can set up, you can put in your Bitcoin address or a list of Bitcoin addresses and automatically withdraw that Bitcoin once it gets above a certain threshold or on a weekly basis. Now, with Swan, there's so much free educational content and material out there, whether that's Swan's newsletter, Swan Signal Live, Dante's Daily Bitcoin Show. There's just so much material out there that Swan makes available for free because part of the mission here is to help create a real base of hardened Bitcoin hodlers and to create these intransigent Bitcoiners who are the intransigent minority. So that's part of the mission. Go and sign up to Stack Sats over at swan.com. Next up, mempool.space. Mempool.space is the leading Bitcoin and blockchain visualizer. I use mempool.space all the time when I want to keep track of what's going on in Bitcoin's mempool. And on the front page of mempool.space, you can see the transaction fee estimates. So if you want to get your transaction confirmed in the next block, I like to use the high priority fee estimate over on mempool.space. Now, mempool.space has a range of features and the team is continually innovating. They've got some real heavy hitters on their team. They're continually adding new features and new ways to visualize and understand what's going on the chain. You can search Bitcoin transactions by pasting in the TX ID, that's the transaction ID of a particular Bitcoin transaction. You can view the Lightning Network, you can view Liquid Network, you can view the Mining Explorer. There's just so many things you can explore there, and they have a mempool accelerator program with a wait list. So you can sign up for that over at mempool.space/accelerator. And finally, CoinKite.com. CoinKite make the best Bitcoin hardware that you can use to secure your coins. So when you get a cold card or the new cold card Q device, you can generate your keys in an offline way without connecting to a computer, without connecting to an online service. You can generate those keys offline. Now you can add additional entropy using dice rolls, or you can use the inbuilt entropy, and then you can sign those Bitcoin transactions also offline. So that's a really cool feature. Now, don't be scared if you're a beginner. You just directly plug your cold card or cold card Q device in. But I think this is a great way to get started. And then later, as you increase your knowledge, you can then start to move to things like air gapping and potentially to using CDEXOR or multisig if you choose, or potentially a passphrase. So there's all kinds of different options you can use to secure your coins. You can use the cold card easily with desktop software such as Sparrow Wallet or Spectre Desktop, or on the mobile, you can use it easily with Nunchuck or Keeper as an example. So go and get your cold cards over at coinkite.com. Use code Livera for a discount on your cold cards. And now back to the show with Patrick. Interesting. Yeah, so as you say, I've heard people use the term HODL ratio, right? Like this idea that you're earning a certain amount, but you're HODLing this much and you're flipping the rest into fiat because you obviously have to pay your bills and your rent and all these other aspects, you know, business expenses, which is fair enough. And so in those early days, did you also get a sense of merchants who start accepting Bitcoin, but then not enough people come and spend there, so then they kind of forget, or they leave the terminal somewhere else, and that, you know, only the manager knows how to use it? That kind of, did you get that same kind of pattern happening?
Yeah. That's still the biggest problem. But one thing that we don't have here is that for Bitcasa, you only need to open actually a web page. So we just have a shortcut on their mobile phones, which they obviously always have. Or if it's a place with a lot of employees, then they just have a shortcut on their tablets or iPad or whatever they use it at the store. So you don't have a separate terminal for just the Bitcoin payments. We have seen that happening in 2014 as well in Amsterdam, where another group was actually orange pilling Amsterdam, and they were teaming up with BitPay back then, and they had a hardware device where all these merchants could use this hardware device for processing the payments. But my experience as well was whenever I went to Amsterdam and tried to rent a bicycle at the place where they said they accept Bitcoin, then yeah, I came there and the guy was, oh yeah, where's the thing again? Oh yeah, here it is. Oh damn, it's empty. I need to first load it
charge
up again.
It, yeah.
Yeah, charge it. And so yeah, that was a horrible experience. So we were, yeah, pretty happy that we just kept Bitcash as a website, actually.
Right, I see. And so then if you sort of move it forward over the years, did you sort of have like merchants come and go and sort of with bull and bear season? Like, was that kind of how it happened?
Yeah, not really with the bull and bear season, but I think the things that changed the very most was obviously the corona period with all the lockdowns, because yeah, simply a lot of the merchants that accepted Bitcoin didn't survive that that period at that time. And in that same year, also the new anti-money laundering regulation kicked in the Netherlands, where Bitkassa was no longer allowed to actually convert the Bitcoins into euros. So we were only allowed to forward the Bitcoins into the wallet of the merchants. And they needed to convert them themselves at one of the exchanges that had a license at the Dutch Central Bank. And that cost, for instance, at a gas station. I was really fond of a gas station where I could just pay with Bitcoin. But yeah, they told me it's too much of a hassle for the administration if we cannot just automatically convert it into euros. So they decided to no longer accept Bitcoin. But so that cost us like half of the merchants in Arnhem, I'd say, because at the height there were like 120 merchants in Arnhem accepting Bitcoin. And yeah, of course, not every one had a lot of transactions. So probably I've also had some merchants tell me, well, I haven't had a single Bitcoin sale in a year. So yeah, I don't see any reason to accept it any longer. That's also how we lost a few. But for we started it with 15 merchants, and recently I checked out how many of those first 15 were still accepting Bitcoin. And just last month another one retired, and that left us with only two merchants of the original 15
who are still 15. Yeah,
but I think in yeah, in those 10 years, I probably onboarded like 300 merchants or something like that.
Right, but yeah, because it's the churn factor.
Yeah, yeah, churn. And it's amazing. It was an eye-opener for me, at least. How often a merchant just goes bankrupt or leaves, or they get another owner takes over the place, or that sort of stuff.
I mean, business is hard, right? Like, there's a lot of, especially amongst restaurants and clubs and bars and things, there's just a lot of turnover in general. Like, even if they like Bitcoin, their business might not survive. So, you know.
But for instance, the last one who, the merchant that retired had a restaurant for lunch only. And now the new owner has also a dinner option and a lunch. And the old owner told the new one, yeah, you should really accept the Bitcoin part. Let me just introduce you to Patrick and he will help you out.
Yeah, cool. No, well, that's so good.
So the next meetup will be there.
Yeah. The importance, I think, to me as well, is having local people around. Because if there's nobody sort of local around to sort of drive the adoption in terms of meetup, in terms of going and spending sats there, like it just kind of all crumbles if there's not enough local momentum, I think.
Absolutely, yeah. This is people often came to me, hey, it's cool what you did in Arnhem. Can you also do this in Rotterdam or in my town? And yeah, that's not how that happens. There needs to be a local community who drives this this adoption. And yeah, I don't have any time to also onboard merchants in other cities. Of course, whenever I go to another place, I'll just ask the merchant if I can pay with Bitcoin and just plant a seed in their head that there is some request for it. But and sometimes it works, and sometimes I see that they accept Bitcoin a few months later, and sometimes not. But local adoption is very important.
Yeah, I see. And I'm curious how you would compare with any of the other circular economies out there. Obviously, there's El Zante, Bitcoin Beach, and various ones around the world now. How would you compare, you know, how things have gone with Arnhem City versus others?
Well, I've been to El Zante and Berlin in November, in El Salvador both. And yeah, I really like what I saw there. El Zante is just a beautiful beach village, and Berlin is slightly bigger, but also much smaller than Arnhem. But yeah, how it's the drive over there is amazing, and they've got like all these people that are actually going to live over there. And of course, it really helps that that Bukele is very positive about Bitcoin and made it legal tender. While here in the Netherlands, there's still like banks who are giving merchants a hard time whenever they try to convert Bitcoin into euros and that sort of stuff. So, yeah, that's a different part. So, but yeah, I'd say Arnhem is a really nice place. And but yeah, El Zante is like a beautiful server village, incomparable to me. But and what I also see in El Zante and El Kasi, for instance, of Ekasi, is the impact that it actually has on the local community, where people were not having modern financial tools to use, and with Bitcoin they certainly have international options with payments and that sort of stuff, and that actually changes people's life, where they can get remittance very easily. And here in Arnhem that's totally not the case. So here in Arnhem we were more like, okay, we just want to have some sort of a showcase to let people see that Bitcoin is not only something that you can use on dark markets, but you can also just use it to buy your groceries, or it's actually just working as ordinary money. And yeah, that was just our main goal, to actually open the eyes of people that there is an alternative for the financial system, where taxpayers are bailing out banks. We really wanted to show that there is an alternative.
What about on the other side of it, people earning Bitcoin? I'm curious if you have seen any of that. And that's something that I know even Bitcoin Ekasi and Bitcoin Beach in El Zante, those projects did try to make sure people locally were earning. Maybe in your case, it might be more like, you know, Bitcoin hodlers who move to Arnhem City because they can spend their Bitcoin. Do you get anything like, do you see that, or what do you see?
Yeah, I think in 2015, actually, when Otto de Voogd is also a Dutch guy, but he lived in Estonia for 10 years. And he had some trouble with the Estonian government about his Bitcoin exchange, which he was running over there. And he no longer wanted to live in Estonia, and he was looking for a new place. And he was actually considering Dubai or Spain, but then decided to move to Arnhem because of Arnhem Bitcoin City. And yeah, we just welcomed him to the place. And Otto was able to pay his rent with Bitcoin also. So yeah, he was like living the Bitcoin standard in Arnhem in 2015 already. But it's not like there's a lot of people who
are doing that. Yeah,
who are doing that. It's still an exception. Yeah, I know some people in the Netherlands who are being paid in Bitcoin. Aaron van Weerdum, for instance, is one of those. But it's not like he is visiting Arnhem very often to do some shopping, I believe. But yeah, it is possible, and I really recommend people to do it, because it actually supports, of course, the Bitcoin economy in Arnhem.
Interesting. Yeah, that's great. So let's talk a little bit about adopting Bitcoin Arnhem. So I know that this is coming up. So tell us a little bit about that. What are you hoping to achieve there?
Yeah, we did a conference in 2016 where, for instance, Peter Todd was one of the speakers. And back then, Giacomo was also present, but I didn't know him. So he was just as a visitor present back then. And then a year later, there was like another conference in Arnhem, which we didn't organize ourselves. And that was the Future of Bitcoin, I believe that was called. And it was Yeah, and a remarkable conference because Bitcoin Cash was launched at that conference, and we were not aware that that was going to happen in Arnhem. And yeah, now that Arnhem Bitcoin City is turning into the anniversary of 10 years, we thought we should do something with that. So I was already planning on organizing another conference, and then I went to El Salvador at the Adopting Bitcoin conference. And I noticed that in Cape Town, there was also an Adopting Cape Town conference. So I reached out to the organization of Adopting Bitcoin. What does it take to do Adopting Bitcoin in Arnhem? And is it something that you would support? And they were really supportive about it. And they just asked, oh, how can we help you? And please do. And we're just adopting. We're bringing Adopting to Arnhem. And yeah, it's going to be a 1 day conference, but with a lot of satellite events before the conference date. So there's like Pizza Day, 22 of May, which will be about a bit of the opening of these of this conference week. And then on the 25th of May, there will be actually the 1 day conference where we have a lot of speakers doing talks. And in between, there's like a Bitcoin walk with one of the node runners in the beautiful nature around Arnhem. But probably also a board game session with Huddle Up and Block Hunters game. There will be a BitDev meetup, a Bitcoin mining workshop, which you can follow. So yeah, there will be a lot of things that you can do in Arnhem in those in this period. And it promises to be a very nice conference. I'm looking really forward to it.
That's cool to see. I'd also want to get a bit of your insight on Lightning and sort of how you dealt with the SegWit, the block size wars aspects of it, and then shifting to Lightning. I think that might be interesting for people to hear about as well. So let's start with kind of your experience of the block size war and sort of the fees, because as I recall, the fees were rising, and for somebody who's trying to get people to spend, that's obviously going to be difficult. So what was that like?
Well, everything went pretty well up until 2017, and then at November, December 2017, the fees started really to rise. And back then, most of the people were using wallets like Mycelium or Bread Wallet. And Bread Wallet, for instance, wasn't very clear about how much fee you would pay for a transaction. So we had people who were buying for $15 of 50 euros of groceries, and were actually also paying like $15 of fee for the Bitcoin transaction. Yeah. But they didn't really notice it because, it was a bit of hidden in that in the interface of that wallet. But we did get remarks about it, also from merchants who were spending some Bitcoins themselves. So, hey, what is this? Why am I losing so much of my Bitcoin for this? And yeah, things went really out of control in January 2018. And yeah, the average fee was like $30 for a transaction back then. So yeah, we decided, okay, this is a problem. We don't know how to handle it. We just told the merchants, okay, sorry, at the moment it's not possible to use Bitcassa, and we advise you not to accept Bitcoin because of the transaction fees. And that was a very tough time because the Lightning Network was not around at the time. The paper was there, but there was no working Lightning Network. So for 1 month, we closed the Bitcoin City project. And then in February, when the mempool was lowering again, we reopened it and just prayed for a bit that it wouldn't rise as much again. But yeah, it was not a very good time back then. My first tests with the Lightning Network were also not very great. I remember testing the mobile Eclair wallet back then. And I think the majority of my transactions failed because of routing problems or other problems. I still got screenshots from these error messages I got back then. So yeah, actually we were looking at, okay, maybe we should try out other cryptocurrencies as well. We were like Bitcoin only at the time, and we had like a lot of people coming to Bitkassa and asking, hey, can you maybe also shill or shitcoin, and we'll pay you a good amount of money if all these merchants in Arnhem will also accept our shitcoin. But we also we were very reluctant to that. We were in it for the long run, and we really believed in Bitcoin. But yeah, there was a problem back then. So we were actually working on Bitkassa integration for Litecoin and other coins. And yeah, then Joost Jager, one of the developers of L&D Labs, came to us, which happened to be also someone we knew from the past. It came to us, hey, you should now check Lightning Network again, because it's actually much improved. And yeah, you just check it out, and it will probably work pretty fine by now. So at Pizza Day 2019, we had Lightning integrated into Bitkassa, and everybody was able to pay with Lightning at all of the merchants in Arnhem. So yeah, that's a bit how we moved into Lightning.
I'm curious, from 2019 onwards, how were the payment success rates at that time?
Pretty good, I'd say. I've rarely had any problems with people paying with Lightning, or trying to pay with Lightning that I'm aware of, because sometimes I talk to merchants and then I get a story about somebody who wanted to pay with Bitcoin. But most of the time, those people were coming to the merchant with their Binance app and thought they could pay with from the Binance app, and by just scanning the QR code, which obviously does not work. But no, for Lightning it was pretty, I think the success rate is nearly 100%, I'd say.
Interesting, because depending on who you talk to, you get this different story. People are saying, oh look, it fails all the time and doesn't work and etc. But I think there is a very clear use here that in person, you don't have to wait for confirmation. You don't have to worry about this sort of underpay, overpay situation.
Oh yeah.
It's just instantly done. There is a lot of simplicity to that, and I think that's one area where maybe it's still, despite all the work of the community to sort of show how easy Lightning is, a lot of people still don't get it. They still kind of parrot this line of, oh, 10 minutes for confirmation, and that's true for larger values, but if we're just talking retail-level payments, clearly Lightning is good enough.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember some meetups, for instance, the meetups in Amsterdam, where they were also using Bitkassa. Some of the people were running their own node, and they used Zeus, I believe, and there was some sort of, and Tor, and I believe they had some problems with the communication with their own node at the time. Not just the channels. I think the channels were done, but yeah. So that might be something that some people had a problem with. But yeah, it most of the time actually worked quite well.
Yeah, well, that certainly corrects the narrative a little bit because I think people were saying it was still bad even up until recently. But here you're saying even in 2019. No. It was still working.
Yeah, 2018 it was not good. 2018 was very bad in my personal experience. But 2019, from May on, it was pretty good. Yeah,
fantastic. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing how the event goes. Hope you get a good attendance there, and let's see how the adoption goes.
Yeah, adoptingbitcoinarnhem.com is the website of the conference where people can check it out.
Great. Well, we'll put that in the show notes. And Patrick, thank you for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me, Stefan. Bye.
All right. I hope you enjoyed the show. Get the show notes at stefanlevera.com. And I've got a newsletter over at stefanlevera.substack.com. Thanks, and I'll see you in the Citadels.